I'm Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, brought to you by ministryofhemp.com, America's leading advocate for hemp and hemp education. Welcome back to the Ministry of Hemp podcast. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking to Eloise Thiessen. She is the president of the American Cannabis Nurses Association. We talk about everything from building a cannabis regimen to who is cannabis right for, to how to talk to your relatives that may benefit from cannabis, but who are a little afraid to try it out. It's a great conversation, and I hope you stick around for it. But before we get into that, you may have noticed that the world has changed recently. It started with the death of George Floyd up in Minneapolis at the hands of a police officer. This kicked off an unprecedented amount of protest and incredible support for the Black Lives Matter movement that it desperately deserves. And we here at Ministry of Hemp are taking it very seriously as well and doing our part, because it's not just our job as good citizens of the United States to make sure that all of our citizens are taken care of, but it's also our job as hemp advocates to recognize that a lot of this police brutality and arming of police force and the innocent deaths of Black people at their hands stems from the war on drugs. Our editor-in-chief, Kit O'Connell, put together a fantastic piece that you can find on ministryofhemp.com right now, and of course I'll have a link to it in the show notes, but it basically talks about how this started in the 60s with President Nixon. Cannabis has been a major target of the war on drugs, the same war that has led to ballooning prison populations and done terrible amount of damage to both Black and Latino communities. We were thrilled to see so many different hemp companies filling our email inboxes. Some of them even let their employees take the day off to go and demonstrate peacefully. It's been amazing, and we are calling on all hemp companies out there to support Black Lives Matter and support this movement and help fight racial injustice in this great country. Some of you are probably thinking, Matt, this is quite the leap from hemp to Black Lives Matter, but it's really not. And if you head over to Ministry of Hemp and check out the piece that Kit wrote, you'll see there's a long history here, and it really does start with the war on drugs. My conversation today is with Eloise Thiessen. She's the co-founder and chief visionary officer of Radcliffe Health. Prior to Radcliffe Health, Eloise founded Green Health Consultants, which is a medical cannabis clinic that helped patients use cannabis to help treat chronic and age-related illness. She was one of the first healthcare practitioners to bring clinical dosing regimens to the cannabis space, and she's treated more than 5,000 patients using cannabis. Currently, Eloise is an adult geriatric nurse practitioner, and she lives with her husband and two girls. I spoke to her from her house in Northern California. Here's my conversation with Eloise Thiessen. Eloise, welcome to the Ministry of Hemp podcast. It's nice to have you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You've done an amazing amount of work and been on an incredible journey. So let's just start. Where did this journey begin? And I mean, it's ended with you as the president of the American Cannabis Nurses Association, which is incredible. But I'm guessing at one point you were just a nurse and you decided to go off into a direction that you probably felt a lot of pushback for.
Yes, I call myself an accidental entrepreneur. I certainly did not anticipate being in this sort of platform. My background is in oncology. So I've been in nursing for 20 years and worked with oncology patients for about 13 years at various levels, you know, managing other nurses, working directly with them. I suffered from an accident that left me in chronic pain. So at the age of 36, I ended up being completely disabled and quickly learned how our standard of care with pharmaceuticals for chronic pain is ineffective.
Oh, yeah.
So I had my own personal journey towards cannabis as an alternative medicine and quickly became curious as to, you know, why wasn't this being offered to me and why did it work so well? And then you start learning about the endocannabinoid system and all the different components of the plant. My mind was really blown. But I was successful at using cannabis to come off all my pharmaceuticals. So I was really fortunate to get off the opioids, get off the cocktail. I think I was on 8 different medications at one point.
Ugh.
I was able to go back to school to become a nurse practitioner. And I was working, doing my clinical hours in an oncology office. And every day patients were asking me about it. I mean, it almost became kind of comical. Like, do I smell like pot?
You know, sure.
Am I sweating it out? Like, you know, do I have a green aura around
right,
me?
Because right. Are you going to call the cops?
Closed, And they would whisper it. They would, sure. You know, they would close the door and they would say, what do you think about cannabis? And I said, oh, I think it's such a great idea. It became pretty obvious pretty quickly that people wanted somebody to help them navigate cannabis as a medicine. You know, how does it work? What should I expect? Is it going to interact with other medications?
Right.
So I just took a leap of faith and decided to start a practice with a physician that was geared towards helping patients navigate cannabis as a medicine. I started that in 2014, and that's where I sort of led me to eventually my work with the American Cannabis Nurses Association.
I think it's amazing that a lot of the people that I've spoken to on this show that work in healthcare have very similar stories where they mm-hmm. were either working in healthcare and they saw how many pain pills, you know, and opioids they were handing out and said, mm-hmm. there's got to be something better. Or like you, they had an incident where they became a patient and went, mm-hmm. oh my God, they are giving me a lot of opioids. And that
yes.
slowly pushed them into the cannabis world, which I think it's amazing you ended up there. I'm sorry you had, you know, an incident, but
it's okay.
That's
okay.
Incredible.
Lemonade.
So you, mm-hmm. you get into this and you start working with a physician and developing regimens. What does that look like when a patient comes in and says, okay, I have this kind of pain? Well, how does this mm-hmm. work? How do you put together a regimen?
So usually, you know, I mean, the most common question I get is, well, what should I use for X, Y, and Z?
Right.
And I wish it was as simple as me saying, you know, take 5 milligrams of THC at bedtime, mm-hmm. call me in 2 weeks. You know, cannabis is such a complex plant. The endocannabinoid system is so complex. We're really trying to still understand a lot of that. And you know, really figure out what are the best protocols, what are best practices. So it's very individualized.
Right.
You know, when somebody comes in, I do a very thorough health history. I mean, I'm looking at your age, you know, what have you tried, what worked, what didn't work, how much sleep do you get, what kind of support system do you have, have you tried cannabis before, how much alcohol are you drinking?
Yeah.
Because you see that a lot
definitely.
In the older population. How much water do you drink? What other symptoms do you have? And then working with the patient to determine their goals of care. And we're really fortunate in California to have access to huge cannabinoid profiles.
Definitely.
A lot of different cannabinoids to work with. So, you know, I will use best practices, you know, sort of what I found works for, you know, like with peripheral neuropathy, for example. And, you know, start the patient there and provide them with a full treatment plan. You know, start with this dose, increase it on this day. This is your target dose. Here's your potential side effects. It really helps them ease them into it and give them more confidence in it as a medicine.
Sure. I mean,
because
they're used to that.
Most people are scared.
Well, of course they're scared. It's new. But when you regiment it like that, like what you're talking about, this is the same way that you would introduce any medication, basically.
Right.
And I like that you're treating it as a medication.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Northern California is where you're at, right? And California mm-hmm. is very green friendly, we'll call it. What do you say to people in other states that aren't so friendly, that mm-hmm. are looking to getting into something like you are in, where you're not just educating, mm-hmm. but you're actually helping patients with cannabis? What do you say to these other people that are fighting, like in North Dakota, and I'm in Nebraska, for example?
I mean, oh.
Is there any hope or...
There is. Yeah. You know, it's, I think people look to California as like having it together. And I would say that we're progressive in terms of what we are, like our cannabinoid products that we have available. But we're not progressive in how we treat this as a medicine.
Right.
And, you know, it still is very much access is based on where you live and your zip code. Right.
Yeah.
So it's when I first got into this, I remember my cannabis attorney, I was so, you know, exacerbated at times and just how hard it was. And she's like, you're either a warrior or an advocate. And I'm like, I think actually you end up being both because
you
have to fight so hard to educate people and help them remove the stigma that they had. I mean, I came with my own stigma.
Sure.
But the American Cannabis Nurses Association has almost 1,400 members across the United States. So we have these little gems all throughout our country, our nation, that are educating at the local level. And I think that's really where our work needs to start.
Definitely.
Is act local, think global. And, you know, we're fighting local, city, state,
sure.
and federal government.
I'm sure. That was my next question. It's like, what does that look like? 1,400 people nationwide. Everyone is obviously fighting different battles. But, like, what kind of pushback are you guys feeling? I would assume it's pretty intense from insurance companies and medical institutions and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to, a perfect example is, you know, we're a nonprofit national nursing organization. We don't do anything but educate, and we just had our bank account shut down. And, you know, it's like, sorry, we don't deal with cannabis businesses. And, you know, I finally just decided to be really stern and say, you need to show me. First of all, you need to prove to me how we're a cannabis business. And if you can't, I'm reporting you to the FDIC because it's discrimination. You know, how far that will go, I don't know. But that's part of the work that we have to do is to really, you know, push back, keep pushing that uphill battle.
Seems like the financial battle is the biggest battleground right now, too. It seems like insurance companies are even opening to this a little bit, but it's the banking industry that seems to be holding everything back. And they're not even afraid of it because it's scary or it causes reefer madness. It seems like they're just afraid that the FDIC is going to shut them down and say, no, you're dealing in something illegal. Good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have the safe banking. It needs to be a priority, especially when I look at, you know, what's currently going on right now with these armed robberies because of the rioting and looting. You know, there's no protection for these cannabis businesses who are having their safes stolen with cash in it because they don't have bank accounts, you know, and I'm certain that the communities, the city councils and the state's going to come back and say, see, we told you that cannabis is dangerous and they just don't get it. Right. It's like, well, you know, if we had safe banking, we wouldn't have thousands and thousands of dollars on site.
Yeah. You literally forced someone into a cash business. And what happens to cash businesses? They get knocked off. Of course.
Right. Ugh. Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. So on a lighter note, switching gears a little bit, you are a geriatric nurse. Tell me about what are the bulk of the patients that you see? Who are they? What are they coming to you for?
They're predominantly female. I would say about 85% of my patient base is female. Usually around 75, 76. So they missed sort of that time in the 60s when they would have been exploring or experimenting with cannabis or psychedelics. So they really are cannabis naive, and they're usually a little bit nervous or hesitant about cannabis. They come in with this sort of like, well, Eloise, I don't want to smoke it, and I don't want to get high, and I don't want to gain weight. So they have these sort of stigmas that they're bringing with them, right?
You know, and in your head, you're like, actually, you do. You just don't know.
And I do actually have that conversation with them. I'm like, well, tell me, what do you think getting high means? You know, they're like, oh, I don't want to hallucinate and lose control. And I'm like, okay, well, do you want to feel more communicative with your spouse? Do you want to feel less anxious and less angry and less irritable?
Right.
They're like, yeah, actually, I think I do. So they're primarily coming to me for age-related chronic illness, chronic pain, anxiety, depression, insomnia. I do get some neurological conditions like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. And then, of course, people undergoing chemotherapy is another big one.
I'm sure. How much of what, and obviously we can't go into like hardcore data here, but I mean, if you had to guess, like how much of what you are prescribing would you say is THC versus CBD?
I would say it's pretty even. And of course, it depends on the condition. So right. I find that CBD can be great for anxiety. I mean, we're definitely seeing some data to come out to support that. It's a great antidepressant, anti-anxiety.
Yeah.
The chronic pain usually needs multiple cannabinoids, and usually THC is really important there. Interestingly enough, with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's patients, THC tends to be more effective as well.
Really?
You know, CBD can be great, but it really depends on the product.
Right. Of course, you've got to have the good stuff. Otherwise, it doesn't make any difference. What do you think, from your opinion, when you said a lot of these patients that come in have stigmas they bring with them, is the stigma against CBD as large as it is against THC, or do you think they just don't even understand what it is?
I don't even think they know sometimes it's related to the marijuana cannabis plant,
right?
You know,
that's fair.
They're much more open to it because of the quote unquote high that is not associated with it.
Of course.
But the conversation I try to have is like, look, THC is very therapeutic. It's people just have over-consumed unintentionally because they don't understand dosing, right?
Right.
And that's where we see adverse effects.
So you are one of the co-founders and the chief executive officer of Radical Health. Tell me about Radical Health. Like, how big is this? How many people are there? What kind of an operation is it?
There's a whopping two of us.
Oh,
so,
wow. At least management meetings are easy, right?
You know? Yes, that's right. That's right. So Radical Health was founded in 2018, and we're an education company. So what we do is create content for healthcare professionals who want to learn about, you know, the endocannabinoid system.
Sure.
It primarily was started for nurses, but we've expanded to all healthcare professionals. There's just the two of us that work on the content, and it's all available online. So people can watch the content on demand and learn about the
Very
ECS
cool.
and cannabinoids.
Very cool. We'll have links to that in the show notes, of course.
Oh, thank you.
Definitely.
Appreciate that.
So are these professionals, are they coming to you, or are you going to them?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, there's definitely, I've done a lot of work, you know, boots on the ground in my community. I've done a lot of outreach to support groups, like giving talks to Parkinson's groups, and also local hospitals, hospices. And, you know, then it kind of becomes word of mouth from there.
Right. Do you see many, and I'm not trying to like put anybody on the spot or start a fight, but like, do you see many, I mean, I'm obviously on your side, but do you see many of these professionals pushing back? Do some of them come at you just to be like, I want to see if this is BS and I want to see what she's got?
Oh yes. Yes. I have been, harassed and, called names.
I'm sure.
And the most recent experience was last year.
Oh really?
And,
can you talk about it without naming names?
Oh, totally. Cool. You know, it's funny because people are like, oh, it's so great what you do. And I'm sure everybody thinks you're a rock star, you know, talking about education and cannabis. And I'm like, no, people really don't see the value in it still.
Oh, yeah.
And I was asked to do a talk for physicians at a hospital in Southern California. And I was told, Eloise, you're probably going to get 5 or 6 people here.
Right.
And so I was like, okay. And then next thing I know, it's wall to wall people. I mean, it's standing room only. It's wall to wall people.
That's great.
And this guy had come up to me prior to the talk, and he was starting to drill me. Well, I hear cannabis causes schizophrenia, and you know all of those, you know, those concerns that people have. And
the Reefer Madness playbook, basically.
Yes, yeah. Just going through it, and I was answering his questions really politely, and then the talk started, and then he started interrupting me during my talk with the same questions, now with his audience there. And I finally got to the point where I just wouldn't make eye contact with him anymore because I'm like, I'm not going to entertain your questions anymore.
Yeah.
We've already discussed this. And then he just got so angry that he stood up in the middle of my talk and yelled at me.
Oh my God.
You're talking about a dangerous drug and I'm not going to tolerate it.
Oh, so this is a crazy person, just full on lunatic at this point.
Full on, like, and yeah. Stormed out. And you know, I was like, okay. And I just went back to my talk, but you know, inside I was like, oh wow, that was, 2010.
Sure.
And then, of course, afterwards, I had a group of physicians come up to me and say, don't worry about that guy. He's out there.
Of course.
That was his style. But you certainly do get people who get very angry about, you know, it's a drug and,
right.
you know, people, you're promoting the wrong thing.
What about the other side of that? Like the people that aren't necessarily lunatics, but like just skeptics, real skeptics mm-hmm. who want to group. Mm-hmm. Like I admit I am a skeptic and mm-hmm. I think it's good to be skeptical because when something mm-hmm. we can start to see data come in, it's very difficult to be skeptical, but
yes,
there are a lot of skeptics out there that put CBD and THC and cannabis as a whole in with holistic healing and, you know, all this other woo that's out there. I mean, mm-hmm. have you dealt with a lot of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes people, see it as sort of a hippy dippy, you know, medicine,
Absolutely.
Right? They don't take it seriously. And I think you're right. I think it's important to be skeptical. I think that, you know, often the pushback I get is we don't have enough research, which, you know, I will say yes and no,
right.
You know, you have to understand the history of the plant and why we don't have enough research.
Yeah.
You also, you know, we do have good research on some things like sleep and pain using cannabinoids for those conditions. We actually have really good data on that. So it's really about having that conversation of like, yes, here's where we do need more data. Here's where we have some beginning data. And then, you know, kind of when I was watching the whole COVID crisis, how accepting people were of looking at other drugs for off-label and starting to administer them without good clinical data or trials.
Yeah.
And so I would love to see us, you know, have that sort of acceptance for cannabis, which I consider to be incredibly safe. You know, why are we so afraid to, you know, the other pushback I'll get was, well, there was only 40 or 50 people in that trial. It wasn't big enough. You know, and again, you could say, well, it's small because people are scared.
And right.
You're not going to get a lot of people who are going to come out and try it.
We've also just started testing this stuff. Literally, we've had 75 years where we couldn't even talk about it, let alone test it. And not too long ago, I was on Twitter and I had seen somebody had posted something about, you know, hydroxychloroquine or whatever. And they had said hydroxychloroquine mm-hmm. kills people, whereas CBD has been proven to cure COVID-19. And I was like, okay, let's back up. I totally agree with you. Hydroxychloroquine is a bad idea, no doubt. But let's not start saying that CBD cures COVID-19. And mm-hmm. and then they're like, well, check out this study. Check out this. And like, those are studies. I get it. Mm-hmm. But this mm-hmm. is not helping the cause. You know, it's like there's both sides are bad. And we need to just kind of pare it down. Treat it like a science.
Yeah.
Treat it like a real medical profession and a medicine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you wrote a book all of it in 2019, all about pain. It's called Pain Free with CBD. Tell me about that. I mean, you haven't mentioned being an author before this. So all of a sudden you became an author too.
I know. 2019 was an intense year. And I was fortunate enough to write a chapter in the book with Alice O'Leary Randall. And I don't know if you're familiar with her.
I can't say that.
But her husband. So she's actually a very important person in the medical cannabis history movement. Her husband, Robert Randall, was the first patient to receive marijuana from the government.
Oh, wow.
That was grown in Mississippi. So he was found to have glaucoma at a very early age, like 23, 24. And he found that when he inhaled cannabis, he could actually see better and it preserved his sight. So he decided to take on the federal government and eventually started something that allowed for the government to, you know, administer 300 cigarettes of cannabis a month in this tin. And they had other patients and they started the movement back in the 70s. So she wrote the book and asked if I would come in and do the condition piece. And we put in there a chart for drug, you know, potential drug interactions that's really designed to give patients or consumers some information that they can hopefully bring back to their physicians and say, you know, will you monitor me? This might be a drug interaction. And so that was a lot of fun.
What are the largest drug interactions that you've seen? I'm just curious because like you hear, oh, there's none, there's zero. And then you hear, oh no, there's a million of them. And it's hard to know. I mean,
it's like you said, you know, we have these well-meaning advocates, I think, that sometimes, you know,
go a little too well-meaning.
It's like it starts to become hyperbole. So the, you know, it's interesting. And I mean, when I first came into it too, I was incredibly conservative, like, oh no. I really have seen very few drug interactions that have required a patient to stop using cannabis. You know, we'll definitely see like some certain blood thinners. Warfarin is a known interaction.
I have heard of that.
That needs to be closely monitored. We'll see interactions where like the opioid interactions, people use less of it. So some interactions are actually really positive where you can see they'll start to decrease their pharmaceutical intake.
I would guess vice versa, though. There's doctors that say like, no. We want you to stay on the opioids and decrease this other thing. And then, I mean, we're not great.
Or say if you test positive for THC, we won't prescribe your opioids anymore.
Yeah. We just had a Q&A show and a guy called in and he was from Nebraska as well and had a pain doctor that was saying he's going to test his wife. And if she tests positive for THC, she's cut off. Done. No opioids, zero. And that's completely legal in Nebraska, which is just, he's not a police officer. He is a doctor, you know, it's just insanity to me.
Yeah. It sounds like malpractice. I mean, the suffering that that patient will have as a result of opioid withdrawal is it's miserable.
Well, not to mention that she had like a very serious Crohn's condition and was already in pain and the opioids were not working. So
of course,
what do you say to people like my grandmother, for example? She's in assisted living and she's had a lot of pain because of the surgery she had on her neck. And I would like her to try CBD. She's terrified of trying marijuana for reasons that I totally get. Like, grandma, I do it all the time. I'm fine. Look at me. You know,
it's not enough.
No, it's not enough. But what do you say? Like, I found talking to my mother and talking to her sister, who are very active in her care, they are very resistant. And I get why they are. And I can come to them with information, but they're so skeptical and not even skeptical. They're afraid of that information, where it comes from. Where do you start that conversation? Like, when you meet a patient with a family member or family members, how do you even start that conversation?
I usually ask them, why now? You know, what brought you to consult with me now?
Right.
And that opens up the conversation because they'll say, well, I'm desperate. I've tried everything else.
Yeah.
You know, they're pretty good about revealing their biases or their concerns. So a lot of it is, you know, educating them and building that trust and confidence. You know, it's, you know, a lot of times I'll say, well, why now? And they'll say, well, my grandson told me I should try it, you know, or my kids, you know, told me to try it.
Right.
And they don't. And so they've heard it enough that they're like, okay, I'll try it, but I want to work with a medical professional.
Sure.
So, you know, that really does help open up the conversation. There's already nurses are the most trusted profession, right?
Absolutely.
18 years ago. So
more so than doctors, even. It's crazy.
Trust.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to hear what brought them to it. You know, it fascinates me every time.
Definitely. Well, you're doing amazing work and we're super proud of you. And I'm sorry to hear about your recent financial issues, and hopefully you can get past that. Definitely. But what do you think, in your opinion, would be the best thing that could happen tomorrow to make your life easier?
Well,
and this could be governmental anything to make.
It would be, you know, allowing for safe banking access and allowing for cannabis. You know, we've been deemed essential in so many states during COVID, yet we can't access any of the same resources, relief, stimulus packages that other businesses can. So I just want an even playing field there, you know, and if that, many of our members, when we surveyed them, you know, want the plant descheduled. I know that's going to come with its own challenges, but right now I want safe access, safe banking, safe access. And I want, you know, fairness for all of us in this industry to have the same rights as other businesses.
It's the saddest thing in the world, but every time I ask this question, that is what I hear. I don't hear like, we want huge tax breaks. We want this, whatever. We're like, look, we just want to be treated like everybody else. Please regulate this. Please put rules on it so we can follow them. It's Oh, it's just so sad to hear. But the good news is there are people like you and 1,400 mm-hmm. other nurses across the United States that are fighting mm-hmm. for this. And I just want to say thank you. Please keep it up.
Yeah, thank you.
I know
thank
it's you. Not easy right now, but I think
it's hard being a leader right now.
Right. Being a warrior and an advocate, as you said.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you wanted to talk about you don't think I touched on or I'm not hitting?
To anybody who's considering, you know, exploring cannabis for a serious health condition should really consider working with a healthcare professional to help them get to the right product as soon as possible on the right path.
Absolutely. As opposed to that guy you know that can score some weed, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Doug. Yeah. Buddy Doug.
Don't get me wrong. Doug's great when you're playing video games, but if you're in chronic pain, let's talk to a medical professional.
That's right. Doug may not have everything you need.
Be sure to check out the show notes for the links to Radcliffe Health and the ACNA. And maybe you have a relative that you've been trying to talk about looking into the benefits of hemp or cannabis. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call at 402-819-6417. Tell us your story. I'd love to hear about it. That's about it for this episode. Thanks to everybody that's been downloading and supporting. And like I just mentioned, if you have hemp questions of any kind, call us. 402-819-6417 and leave us a message, and myself and Kit O'Connell, the editor-in-chief of ministryofhemp.com, we heard a rumor that our friend Drew might help us out next time too, could answer it right here in one of our Q&A shows. If you're too shy to leave a message, that's fine. You can hit us up on any of our social media. We're at @ministryofhemp or @ministryofhemp. And you can drop your questions there too. Speaking of Ministry of Hemp, like I mentioned, get over there and check out our Black Lives Matter and Hemp post. It's an amazing read. We've also got a great new CBD review for CBD Pure Hemp Oil and a really good article on CBD topicals. It's a closer look at why people use them. If you want to help spread the message of hemp and support the show, head over to patreon.com/ministryofhemp and become a Ministry of Hemp insider. Any amount you donate helps, and it gets you access to things like our podcast extras that I do, early access to articles, and all kinds of bonus articles too. Not to mention the fact, like I said, it just helps us spread the good word of hemp. And we can't thank our current Patreons enough for helping out. Thank you so much, you guys. Seriously. I got to get out of here, and I like to end the show the same way every time. Remember to take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will you? This is Matt Baum with the Ministry of Hemp, signing off.